We've studied two of the five main offerings that individuals would make as God's people during the time that the law of Moses was in effect. Tonight we're going to look at another one which has a lot of relevance for Christians as far as giving us some insight into the communion, the offering, a number of other things like that. So this is a very applicable offering from the Old Testament. Sometimes it's called the peace offering. Sometimes it's called the thanksgiving offering. Kind of depends on the particular word in a particular place because it's talked about throughout the Old Testament. So this is found in Leviticus chapter 3. It's also found in Leviticus chapter 7, so we'll be referring to a little bit of both of them. Just want to start a little bit with verse 1 when it's first mentioned. Okay? Leviticus chapter 3, verse 1. When his offering is a sacrifice of a peace offering, if he offers it of the herd, whether male or female, he shall offer it without blemish before the Lord. When we look at both of these chapters, we won't be able to read every verse, but when we look at this, the idea of this peace offering, it is a time of a joy. This is a happy celebration. Of the offerings and sacrifices, it's probably the most festive type, the most festive one, because it's about God and the offerer and the priest all communing together. And that's kind of the background to what the peace offering is. That's why I said it had so much to do with our communion today. It has the same type of idea of God and His people all communing at the same time. So that's the idea of what this peace offering is supposed to do. It was voluntary, like the other ones we've talked about. So there was no preset or predetermined number of times you did it or anything like that. It was just when you were, you know, thinking about all God had done for you, who God is and the kind of God He is and all of these things, then you would make this offering. And it was rather specific as to what kind of offering. It was even more specific than the offerings we'd already talked about as to what you could and could not do. So even though it was a voluntary offering and it was just at those times when you were especially, you know, feeling gratitude toward God and thanksgiving, yet He prescribed very specifically how He wanted you to make that offering. And sometimes people have a kind of a hard time with that. Well, this was just something you voluntarily offered to God. Yes, that's true, but He specified how you were to do it. So I think that that's a lesson for us today in a lot of ways too. You know, when we voluntarily, we do a number of things voluntarily, you know, in God's name, but yet He specifies that He leaves a pattern for us to do. So it's not just any old way you want. He specifies the type of things that He wants. Okay, so it said here when it started, it's a sacrifice of a peace offering if he offers it of the herd. Okay, again, we're talking about cattle, whether male or female, so he could do either one. So it could be either male or female. He shall offer it without blemish. So even though it could be male or female, it couldn't be just any old male or female. It had to be one without blemish. You know, not one that had a crooked leg or one eye or, you know, something like that. One you were going to butcher next week anyway. Nope. This was one without blemish. So it was specific as to what kind of offering it could be. He gave you some leeway. It could be a male or female, but not just any male or female. He specified what it was supposed to be. All right. and he shall lay his hand on the head of his offering. So he's handpicked it from his herd, the person who's sacrificing it. Not talking about the priest, talking about the person bringing the sacrifice. So he's handpicked a very, great position. I mean, it was a prized possession because it was one without blemish. He had brought it. He laid his hand on the head of it. Okay, so this was very personal. And kills it at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. And we talked, last week, the week before, about the tabernacle of meeting and where the altar was located. Remember, there were the altar of incense, which was just for incense. And then this is just the altar of burnt offering. And this is what he's talking about. He kills it there. And then Aaron's sons, the priest, shall sprinkle the blood all around on the altar. So there's the first thing that happens. After it's killed, then Aaron's sons, that high priesthood, they take the blood and sprinkle it around the altar. So that's the first thing that happens as far as the sacrifice itself, because different parts go to different ones for different reasons with this peace offering. And the first thing is the blood is to be sprinkled around the altar. Okay. Then he shall offer from the sacrifice of the peace offering an offering made by fire to the Lord. The fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails. Say, we're taking the fat, okay? And the two kidneys, and then the fat that is on them by the flanks, and then the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys, he shall remove. Okay, now the blood's been sprinkled around the altar, so the blood's taken out. And now he takes out this fat that's all around. Okay, why do you think the fat was taken out? What would have been?
It's the Lord's.
Okay, it's the Lord's. And any particular reason it might have been the fat? Yeah, it's the most prized portion of the animal was the fat. You know, nowadays we don't want to do much with the fat, right? But back then it was like considered essentially the most valuable, I guess that's the word, the most prized part of it. So the blood is taken out, sprinkled, then the most prized part is taken out. And done what? Aaron's sons shall burn it on the altar. So that part, the fat and the kidneys, the fat around them, the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys, all of that then is removed, and Aaron's sons burns it on the altar. Okay? Just those pieces or parts. Okay? Just those parts are burnt on the altar of burnt offering, which is on the wood that is on the fire, as an offering made by fire, sweet aroma to the Lord. And we've talked about that before, how that today is kind of like our prayers from the book of Revelation. Our prayers go up as a sweet aroma. These sacrifices went up as a sweet aroma because God had, specified these different sacrifices. And so when people offered them, then it was to him a sweet aroma, something that in his sight was really great. Right. Oh, yeah, sure.
Yep.
And when the person who was offering this was another one where he had to slay the animal himself. Okay, it's his responsibility to slay it. And so he sees this prized animal killed, without blemish, and then the prized portions of it burned on the altar to the Lord. So those things, this was done so people would think about these things as the sacrifices were being made, so that they would understand what a sacrifice was. And they'd be thinking about the importance of it. So there was a reason God did these things. It wasn't, you know, just random. I mean, he had a reason behind all of these things. Okay, so all of that then was burned. Now, if his offering as a sacrifice of a peace offering to the Lord is of the flock, whether male or female, he shall offer it without blemish. Again, now if he's getting one from the flock, he could also be male or female, but it had to be without blemish. So there was another restriction. It couldn't be just some old one that was on its last leg. Okay, it had to be the cream of the crop. If he offers a lamb as his offering, then he shall offer it before the Lord, and he shall lay his hand on the head of his offering and kill it before the tabernacle of meeting. And Aaron's son shall sprinkle its blood all around on the altar. Then he shall offer from the sacrifice of the peace offering, as an offering made by fire to the Lord, its fat and the whole fat tail, which shall remove close to the backbone, and the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys, and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys, he shall remove. And the priest shall burn them on the altar as food, an offering made by fire to the Lord. And these sheep, this fat tail, could weigh many pounds. We're not talking about a little, you know, little tiny thing that weighed a few ounces. We're talking about many, many pounds. So this was a big piece. So when they sacrificed it, it wasn't something tiny. This was a major chunk, I guess is the word, because some of the sheep, you know, could be rather large. And some of the references talk about how huge some of the sheep were back then. And you can look at some other places in the Old Testament that talk about sheep as well, but some of them were huge. So the fat tail, that part around that the little bone, would be rather large. So it could weigh several pounds. And so it wasn't, you know, just a tiny little portion. It was something that was significant. And that was a lamb. Remember it? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yep. Kind of like what fat does for people,
yeah.
Right? You can live off of it.
But they still grow that breed of sheep in the Middle East.
So that was another possibility. You know, there were people who raised cattle, and so they were, if you raised cattle, you took it male or female. Then there are people who raised sheep, and then there are people who raised goats. And the next one is about the goats that are raised and what you could do with them. Verse 12, and if his offering is a goat, then he shall offer it before the Lord. He shall lay his hand on its head and kill it before the tabernacle meeting, and the sons of Aaron shall sprinkle its blood all around on the altar. Then he shall offer from it his offering as an offering made by fire to the Lord. The fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver by the kidneys, he shall remove, and the priest shall burn them on the altar as food. An offering made by fire for a sweet aroma, all the fat is the Lord's. This shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations. In all your dwellings you shall eat neither fat nor blood. The blood was sprinkled, the fat was sacrificed. So that was very, very similar to what the lamb was done. But when we skip over to Leviticus 7, we have a lot more information given. Beginning with verse 11. This is the law of the sacrifice of peace offerings which he shall offer to the Lord. Now, there were different reasons you could give a peace offering. If he offers it for a thanksgiving, then he shall offer with the sacrifice of thanksgiving unleavened cakes mixed with oil, unleavened wafers mixed with oil, or cakes of blended flour mixed with oil. Besides the cakes, as his offering, he shall offer leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving of his peace offering. And from it he shall offer one cake from each offering as a heave offering to the Lord, It shall belong to the priest who sprinkles the blood of the peace offering. Okay, now we've got some additional information here. Okay? One of the reasons you can make this peace offering would be simply for thanksgiving, you know, out of gratitude. If you did, then there were other things to offer with it. Okay? Now, these other things weren't really the offering. They were just things that went with the main offering, like whether it was a bull or whether it was a goat or a lamb. Then you sacrifice these other things with it. They weren't really the sacrifice. The real sacrifice was the animal. So this is not like the grain offering that we talked about. These are just things that you offered with, kind of as an accessory, a supplement to the animal. The animal was the real sacrifice. And so he talks about the different ones that could do it. And then notice, it says, he shall offer one cake of these cakes he just talked about from each offering as a heave offering to the Lord. It shall belong to the priest who sprinkles the blood of the peace offering. So part of that sacrifice went to the priest. A heave offering came from the idea that that was heaved off the altering, heaved off the altar to give to the priest. Okay, and we'll talk about the wave offering in a minute, but the heave offering, that's where the idea comes from. So that portion was given to the priest, so he got that. So from each of those peace offerings that was given for Thanksgiving, then one of those cakes that was offered with the bull or the lamb or the goat was given to the priest. And we'll find out more about what happens with that in a minute. The flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering for Thanksgiving shall be eaten the same day it is offered. He shall not leave any of it until morning. Okay, so there was a stipulation. Okay, there was a stipulation. Had to be eaten that day. All right, had to be eaten that day. It could be eaten any time during that day. So there was flexibility, but still there were limits on it. Had to be eaten that day. But if the sacrifice of his offering is a vow or a voluntary offering, okay? Now, he just talked about the Thanksgiving offering. Now, he says if it's a vow offering or if it's a voluntary offering. And there's a number of places in Psalms, and we don't really have time to look at them all, but lots of places in the Psalms talk about these different offerings. You know, Thanksgiving offerings and vow offerings. So if you were making a vow, then you would make an offering that went with the vow. And he talks here about how it's supposed to be done. So let's read that. It should be eaten the same day that he offers his sacrifice. But on the next day, the remainder of it also may be eaten. The remainder of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day must be burned with fire. So see, there was a little difference between the Thanksgiving peace offering and the vow or voluntary peace offering. And there wasn't a lot of difference, but there was some about what you could do with it. So there were different reasons then why you could make those offerings. Vows, or just a voluntary offering, Thanksgiving offering. And those are, you know, very, I guess you'd say very similar. There might be a little difference between them, but not a lot. Okay, Thanksgivings, vows, free will, or voluntary offerings. All right, and if any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering is eaten at all on the third day, it shall not be accepted, nor shall it be imputed to him. It shall be an abomination to him who offers it, and the person who eats of it shall bear guilt. Now, people might say, well, boy, that's being awfully picky. You've got this sacrifice, and the parts that the priest can eat or so forth, or the part that the offerer can eat, and he can only eat it like a day or two, depending on what the offering was made for. And if he ate it on that third day, it was an abomination to him. He would be guilty of eating what was okay the day before.
How much refrigeration did they have?
Yeah, they sure didn't. So, people think that God is so restrictive, but there's usually a good reason for it. Yes, Skip.
Can we start that again? Because, I get real excited.
You need to start that again. That's a tradition. After third day, we got to burn it. Third day, we burn it. Well, you can go back to the Old Testament. Hey, this is what they did then. We got to burn it. We can't keep eating it. All right. Well, we're going to learn some other things. All right. Some prohibitions about these offerings and sacrifices. The flesh that touches any unclean thing shall not be eaten. It shall be burned with fire, and as for the clean flesh, all who are clean may eat of it. But the person who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord, while he's unclean, that person shall be cut off from his people. So now there's some specifications about the sacrifice itself and the person who sacrifices it. You know, there was, and we'll get to that later on in Leviticus, about a lot of the laws and regulations about what made things clean, what made them unclean. And God was very specific about the process you had to go through. Whether it was, you know, touching a dead body or being around leprosy or, you know, a whole bunch of different things. You know, even if you were in a house that could have had some of this in it. You know, there were regulations about what you had to do. So there were different things that could make a person unclean. And so he was not supposed to make that sacrifice if he's unclean. Because, see, he's bringing something to God, but he's unclean when he does it. Well, that's an incredibly good lesson, isn't it? God wants holy people to worship him. Doesn't want unclean people. You know, he tells us how to be clean, doesn't he? He told them specifically how to be clean. Wasn't any doubt about it. Told them all the steps they need to go through. Well, he does that for us too. He tells us what we need to do to be clean. You know, I mean, 1 John chapter 1, starting about verse 6 or 7, all the way down to verse 10 or 11, talks about how to be clean. You continue to confess, continue to walk in the light, then you continue to have fellowship with God, you continue to have your sins washed away by His blood. So that's how Christians remain clean, pure, holy. Back in that time, there were specifications about if this happens and you become unclean, this is what you must do. And so that's why he told them.
Okay, where it says they should be cut off from the people, that means they need to be killed?
Usually that's what the word cut off means. I haven't read in this case if that's what it meant or not, but usually that's what it means in the Old Testament. If somebody is cut off, that means he's killed. There's probably exceptions to that, like there's to a lot of things, but I don't know in this case. Skip. Right.
They'll be unclean till sundown.
Yeah.
That doesn't say, well, you know, they'll be unclean for a week or whatever.
Yeah. So that would be my guess.
On the footnotes in this study Bible, it says a person will be removed from membership in the covenant community, which means either execution, banishment, or denial of citizenship.
Okay. And I think most of the time it was the execution part, but I think there were times when they were banished from being with them. You know, they weren't allowed to be in the congregation anymore because of that. And there wasn't any reason for that because they were told specifically what, you know, what to do, what not to do. There wouldn't have been any way that they would have been ignorant of it or anything else, that it just chose not to do what he said. He goes on and says, moreover, the person who touches any unclean thing, such as human uncleanness, an unclean animal, or any abominable unclean thing, and who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord, that person shall be cut off from his people. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, you shall not eat any fat of ox or sheep or goat, and the fat of an animal that dies naturally, and the fat of what is torn by wild beast may be used in any other way, but you shall by no means eat it. Okay, they weren't allowed to eat it. I mean, very specific, No way to misunderstand that. They were not allowed to eat it. If anyone does, whoever eats the fat of the animal of which men offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, the person who eats it shall be cut off from his people. Moreover, you shall not eat any blood in any of your dwellings, whether of bird or beast. Oh, that reminds me. When you look at this particular offering, birds weren't allowed. It was just either from the herd or from the flock. That was it. And of course, when you look at all that they were done, you know, a bird, first of all, doesn't hardly have any fat anyway, so they couldn't do that. And second of all, they made a meal out of it. You couldn't be very hungry if you're going to make a meal out of a little bird. So that's probably the reasons why birds were not allowed for the peace offering, because you couldn't have a meal from it. You couldn't follow the same process. So if you were poor at that time, in other words, you didn't have cattle or you didn't have a flock, then most likely you would simply eat with someone who did. Someone who had the cattle and made these sacrifices. Someone who had the flocks and made those sacrifices. But birds were not allowed. Okay, whoever eats any blood, that person shall be cut off from his people. Okay, that was one thing they were absolutely forbidden to do, is eat any blood. None whatsoever. And of course, the blood was what represented the life, we learn later on in Leviticus. So they were not allowed to ever eat any of the blood. Okay, it was always spilled, sprinkled on the altar. So they were not allowed to do that. So he says, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, he who offers the sacrifice of his peace offering to the Lord shall bring his offering to the Lord from the sacrifice of his peace offering. His own hand shall bring the offerings made by fire to the Lord. The fat with the breast he shall bring, that the breast may be waved as a wave offering before the Lord. So this is basically the breast piece, okay? Well, that's what he's calling it. It may be waved as a wave offering before the Lord. And what they would do essentially is they would take this piece, and this is the meaty portion of it, and it would be waved from the person sacrificing this animal. It would be waved to the altar and brought back. Because the idea here was, this is something that is essentially being offered to the Lord, but the Lord is giving it back, and so it was then to be eaten. Okay, kind of a, this is what makes it kind of a joyous festival or so forth, because it was something that was shared. It was a communal type meal here between these different individuals. So it was waved, and this was symbolic, waved from, again, from the animal, the person who'd killed the animal, to the altar and back, because it was like giving it to God, God giving it back, so these people could partake of it, which is what he mentions here in just a minute. And the priest shall burn the fat on the altar, but the breast shall be Aaron's and his sons. Okay? Also the right thigh you shall give to the priest as a heave offering. Okay? And we already talked about heave offering, the idea of that lifted, okay? Lifted up as an offering from the sacrifices of your peace offerings. He among the sons of Aaron who offers the blood of the peace offering and the fat shall have the right thigh for his part. For the breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the heave offering I have taken from the children of Israel, from the sacrifices of their peace offerings, and I have given them to Aaron the priest and to his sons from the children of Israel by a statute forever. So that's what, you know, Aaron and his sons got those pieces to eat of the animal. Again, whether it was the lamb, the goat, or the bull. I mean, they could, well, it didn't have to be a bull. It could be male or female, but of cattle. And so they got those portions for them. And we already talked about what the sacrificer, the person who sacrificed, got. It has been a long day. I'm making up English words. Freshmen do that too. I'm not supposed to. So different ones got different parts of that animal to eat because God essentially gave it back to them. They were essentially saying, you know, we'll give you the whole animal, and God is allowing them in this particular sacrifice to take a large portion of that animal back, and the sacrifice person who sacrificed and his family could eat parts of it, then other parts specified for Aaron and his sons. So it was like God got certain parts, the fat and so forth, what I talked about. And the individual who was sacrificing got some. The Aaron and priest got some. So it was like all three of those were partaking of this animal. And that's why this was sometimes considered, there were applications to the Lord's Supper. You know, because God, or Jesus says that He partakes of it with us in the kingdom when we partake of it. I mean, He's with us. He doesn't physically come, of course, but He is spiritually with us because He's a spirit being now. But, so there's that part that's very similar. We're all partaking of that together. Well, they were doing that back with this peace offering. They were all doing this together, partaking of this feast together. It says, this is the consecrated portion for Aaron and his sons. From the offerings made by fire to the Lord, on the day when Moses presented them to minister to the Lord as priest, the Lord commanded this to be given to them by the children of Israel on the day that He anointed them by a statute forever throughout their generations. And that's from Leviticus. That's what we learn about this particular peace offering. And of course, the idea of peace, the peace part comes in because when this offering is done, God and the worshiper and his family, Aaron and his family, are all at peace. They're all in communion. They're all in fellowship. So they're all partaking of this meal, not obviously not together in the exact same spot, but the idea is it's all from the same animal. And so this is a way of having peace. In the New Testament, you know, we talk about Jesus is the Prince of Peace, and He's the one that brought peace. Remember what He told the church in Ephesus? That's what Jesus did. He came and brought Jew and Gentile together in one body, made peace between them. Said that in Colossians 2, basically the same thing. So He broke down that wall, brought them together, and made peace. And this peace offering in the Old Testament was similar in that regard to what happened, what Jesus did to Jew and Gentile in our day. I think when it talks about Aaron and his sons eating it, that would, the family, because, of course, the women obviously weren't priests, but I think they were, from what I've read, they partook of it as well. And then the ones who had brought the sacrifice, that family also ate of it.
I know that when they multiply and you have a whole lot of it, mm-hmm. here comes all these sacrifices.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Levites didn't receive a lamb grant. They received the sacrifices.
Right.
And
that's what they would get. Right.
Yeah,
and they got it every day because people would be bringing sacrifices every day. So they had food coming in that sense, you know, from the different offerings. And so the grain offering we talked about and this one as well. So they had food coming in for their family because they weren't, you know, their job was not to go out and be, you know, ranchers or shepherds or anything else. They were just to work for the Lord, and that's it. And they'd be provided for through these different offerings. I had just mentioned when you all were coming out how there were some similarities between the peace offering in the Old Testament and what Jesus did for us when He wrote to the church at Ephesus. And I'll read that now. Beginning in verse 13 of Ephesians chapter 2, Paul writes, "But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off," talking about the Gentiles, "have been brought near by the blood of Christ, for He Himself is our peace, who has made both one and has broken down the middle wall of separation, having abolished in His flesh the enmity, that is, the law of commandments contained in ordinances, so as to create in Himself one new man from the two, thus making peace, and that He might reconcile them both to God in one body through the cross, thereby putting to death the enmity. And he came and preached peace to those who were far off and to those who were near. So while the Israelites enjoyed peace between them and God and between them and the priest when they made these sacrifices, Jesus brought this peace to the whole world by him dying on the cross. Jew and Gentile didn't get along before then, but when he came along and died on the cross, there was no separation anymore. It says he broke down that wall of separation. And now everybody today is simply, or can be, in that one body. There's not two, three, four, or five, but just one, which he would later talk about in this same book. And it's that same body that he told the Galatians about, that we're all baptized into that one body. We're baptized into Christ Jesus. We do it by faith. That's Galatians 3:26. Galatians 3:27 says baptism is the act that does it. So being buried in water without faith doesn't produce anything. But with faith in the power of God and in the blood of Christ, then it has power. Then that water can wash away sins. Then that water can make us a new man. Then that water can bring reconciliation. Then that water can bring peace between that individual and God. Just like it did in the first century, just like it does today. And so when we lead this invitation song or sing this invitation song, that's what we need to think about, is how Jesus brought peace into the world, reconciliation to the world, by dying on the cross and shedding his blood.